I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Matt Van Sant. Matt is the president and the CEO of the Claremont County Chamber of Commerce. And let's share from your perspective why you think chamber membership is so valuable and why businesses should really understand what they can and how they can benefit and grow from it.
The Chamber of Commerce business, the association industry, goes back to the beginning of commerce. And in the early times, that was to pursue their own common interests, protections against things that were not in the interest of business growth and development. That moved forward into influencing legislation and doing business amongst themselves. But the real key word there is banding together. And so we encourage business and industry and others to get involved in the Chamber of Commerce activities because it's about associating. It's about banding together because from that commitment, we see a tremendous value return to those individuals and organizations that get involved.
Well, the chambers tend to do a lot of different things, but to get really involved, you have to participate as a volunteer, go to events. You really have to be involved. You can't just send a check and pay your dues and really get the most out of a chamber.
That's correct. The origin of the Claremont County Chamber of Commerce about 40 years ago, with migration out of Hamilton County, with residents and some companies, some business folks got together and began to look at the quality of life in Claremont County, established a hospital, Mercy Hospital Claremont, established a college, the University of Cincinnati Claremont College. And in those early days, the Chamber of Commerce was simply volunteers. There was not a due structure. There were not paid staff. And the key to a real successful Chamber of Commerce in many ways is the involvement of volunteers. So in Claremont County, we have a staff of 8, but we're supplemented with between 150 and 200 volunteers. And that is really where the action is. Stepping in, producing events, attending events, guiding development within the community. So the activity is very broad and also very focused. It's really a matter of how does an individual and organization want to make that association and really make it work for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know not all folks when we grew up loved crowds. And to be interested in the association business, liking crowds, liking people helps. But we have found ways to get folks involved regardless of what makes them comfortable. We'll work with them to make them comfortable and to get that value that's so important.
It is. The value is really what it's all about, ultimately. Nobody cares really what the dues are if they feel like they're getting more value than what they're paying. It's also a great leadership opportunity. It really helps people become better leaders because there's all types of opportunities to get involved in committees, provide leadership. So certainly for businesses who have staff and employees that they want to help grow professionally, it's a great place to plug them in.
It certainly is. We spend quite a bit of time with our companies in Claremont seeking out their workers, their co-workers that are maybe upwardly mobile and looking for a way to kind of learn on the job. So getting involved in chamber events is a chance to sometimes make little mistakes or watch others make mistakes, but certainly to learn and see how others are successful in getting value out of that engagement. The work that goes on both within the business day but also outside the business day is really amazing. And value, and as we say at the chamber, price is a function of value, it's an overall real good investment of time and money.
The key is really to get the most benefit, isn't it? You roll up your sleeves, you get involved, you get active, you really work as a team, and your network just seems to broaden. And again, if folks would be interested in learning more about the Claremont County Chamber of Commerce, Matt, what's your website?
www.claremontchamber.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Matt Van Sant. Matt is the president and CEO of the Claremont County Chamber of Commerce. And Matt, I'm sure you have a pretty full calendar for 2013. What are some of the events that are coming up in the next few months that some of our listeners might be interested in?
Tom, at the Chamber of Commerce, we look forward to January every year. We go through a reorganization, new leadership on the board of directors and committees and so on. So it's really a time of high energy and high activity. Right now, we're in the process of looking at the volunteer roles, recruiting. So we have vacancies on committees and other activities at the Chamber of Commerce. Shortly, we'll have our annual meeting in February. At the annual meeting, we bring in the new chairman, thank the former chairman. But a big part of that event is our small business awards. So we recognize emerging companies and innovative companies. That's in February. We also are planning right now an event for the fall, but the planning is going on right now. And that is an event around the use of technology to solve problems in companies. And so we have some major employers interested in this project. For right now, we're tossing around the word business, or rather technology expo, but it's really going to be a business solutions program, and technology is simply a means to that end. We also, on a monthly basis, have a luncheon, and we will invite in special guests. We hit the ground pretty quickly with those events.
The other thing that chambers generally do is actually got into the community and help push initiatives forward, help better our region as a whole. What are some of the initiatives, Matt, that you see that your chamber's involved in, and maybe even collaboration with other regional chambers?
Quality of life in Claremont County is very important to the business community, because we know that our employers send their employees home at night, and they have to live in a community that's safe and secure. And so the chamber is very involved in the community. Each year we produce a police appreciation banquet, because we know that a low crime rate is important to a community. So the business community has a real close relationship with the police forces. We have a leadership program, and that is there primarily to get those individuals in our county who have an interest in bettering the institutions, organizations in our community. We get them ready. We get very involved in the hospital and the college. The Chamber of Commerce sponsors scholarships.
And you're talking about the University of Cincinnati Claremont?
Yes, ma'am. And at Mercy Hospital Claremont, there are advisory committees and other interactions we have. So the business membership is very engaged in a variety of activities.
How do you do all that?
It's those volunteers, Crystal, and the volunteers are our members. And I'll keep repeating, it's really the key to our success is getting those individuals that come in and say, I want to be a chamber member. And we say, let's spend those first 10 hours of your time volunteering. Because it's better when you go to an event and you see your fellow volunteers than you go to the event and you're all alone. So we encourage volunteering.
So if someone listening today would like to learn more, they want to become a volunteer, what do they call you up? You help them figure out what type of event would be best for them to participate in?
Yes, and we do that in a number of ways. We have a Navigating Your Chamber, which is a periodic new member breakfast. We also meet one-on-one. So we'll try to customize their engagement so that that year later, when they're looking at a renewal decision, that it's an easy decision to make.
Well, I will tell you, being involved in the chamber absolutely was the best thing I ever did. It allowed me to get involved with the community, really learn what's going on in a bigger picture, meet like-minded people who were also very engaged and wanted to really better themselves in terms of their profession and in their communities. What's the contact information if folks listening would like to learn more?
Of course, it's www.claremontchamber.com. Our phone number is 513-576-5000.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, a few weeks ago, Ohio's Governor John Kasich enacted a new incentive and financial opportunity for businesses to take advantage of that will help them reimburse the cost of training for their employees. It's called the Ohio Incumbent Workforce Training Voucher, and it's on a first-come, first-served basis, and it applies to a fairly broad cross-section of industry types. So certainly it's something that I think people should be made aware of.
Well, it is, and it could be important, particularly if you're already doing or planning on doing a training program. They've set aside $20 million for this, and it's kind of a first-come, first-served basis. But you can get grants, in essence, of up to $4,000 per employee under this program.
Again, it's designed to offset a portion of the employer or the employee cost for training and to provide eligible employers for specific costs. For example, if you're in a for-profit organization, because it applies both to for-profit and non-profit organizations, you can qualify for this if you can meet certain standards. The courses have to be accredited in certain cases, and as I mentioned before, it's specific to a broad cross-sections of industries, including advanced manufacturing, aerospace and aviation, energy, financial services, food processing, technology, chemicals, lots of different types of industries that will qualify for this training credit.
Well, and the key, I think, besides falling within one of those broad categories, is the person being trained, the employee, has to be employed at a facility obviously located in Ohio, because this is an Ohio training credit.
And this does not include employees who are in a retail or service area. So if you're in a restaurant or a retail establishment, it won't work. You won't be able to take advantage. And the employee is also required to be working at least 25 hours a week, and they have to have an hourly wage of at least 150% of the federal minimum wage. And obviously, because it's an Ohio credit, they need to be working in Ohio.
Well, one of the industries is food processing. You don't think that counts a restaurant kitchen worker?
I don't think a restaurant kitchen worker counts, but I do think if it's an organization that processes food or other types of liquid substances, then that may count. The key here is just knowing about the program. You may want to go online to take a look to see whether or not your company can qualify for this. And again, it is a first come, first serve. The website is www.development.ohio.gov/incumbent workforce. And again, you can actually contact Tom or I at our office at Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, and we'll be happy to direct you in the right spot. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today I want to talk about something that rarely occurs. The IRS actually came out with something that was a good idea that'll make things simpler for some people when they prepare their tax returns. And that's a safe harbor, really, for a home office deduction, although it's a limited amount that they're allowing.
That's right. This is really for pretty small home offices, people that are freelancers or they really do use their home office, but it's not a big one. And the IRS has basically said that in certain situations, you're able to claim a deduction no greater than $1,500 for a home office deduction, but you don't have to deal with all of the paperwork that was previously required. You still have some paperwork, but they've streamlined the amount of documentation you need to maintain in order to take advantage of the deduction.
This new rule is in effect in 2013, and a lot of people will still use the current home office deduction, and they have to complete a form, Form 8829, which actually has 43 lines, and there has to be documentation to back up that form. So it is pretty tedious, and a lot of people just don't take home office deductions, one, because of the record keeping, and two, because they're concerned they might trigger an audit.
Well, actually, to your point there, Tom, it's estimated that this simplified version, the simplified method, will reduce paperwork and record keeping on small businesses by an estimated, now get this, 1.6 million hours annually. So that's how much time the IRS estimates that people were spending just tracking this and documenting this information. So just think of what else can be done in terms of how they can grow their business if they don't have to keep the paperwork.
I was going to say, just as an aside, I wonder how many other millions of hours are spent on tax returns by people that could be spent more productively.
But the new option still doesn't change the requirement in terms of the criteria to take the deduction. So, for example, you still have to use your home regularly and exclusively for business. It still is limited to the income generated by your particular business. And there's still other requirements that you need to make sure that you do adhere to be able to claim the deduction. But the bottom line is you don't have to deal with all the paperwork, which is a great benefit to many businesses.
Yeah, from a practical standpoint, this would be most appropriate for somebody who maybe has a part-time business that they utilize out of their home. They have a limited amount of space and expenses, or they simply just don't want to take the home office deduction currently because they're concerned that it elevates their chance of getting audited.
Other deductions that you would normally be able to take in your home office still are allowed. For example, you're able to still claim mortgage interest, real estate taxes, any other direct expenses that relate to that space that's used regularly and exclusively for business. But you cannot depreciate the space. So that's the one change, that you are not allowed to take a depreciation deduction for your home office if you choose to use the simplified method.
But it's certainly worth considering for people, again, particularly if their deductions of outside of their interest and taxes are not that substantial anyway.
That's right. And if you'd like more information on what the details are for this home office deduction, you can visit the IRS website at www.irs.gov for additional details. And certainly be sure to take advantage of this deduction. I do think, to your point, Tom, a lot of people just don't because they're afraid it's going to raise a red flag. But, you know, if you use your home for business and you can qualify, take the deduction. The IRS is certainly not going to come and tell you you missed it. Go ahead and take it up front. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Tim Shiggle. Tim is the founder and chairman of Share This, which we all have known as the little sideways green V that we see on all kinds of websites. Tim, I think it's just genius. Obviously, you created that. You didn't start out, though, your career as a founder of a startup company. You actually began your career where?
Actually, in a small company. I was, I think, the 11th employee, but we were a provider to Procter & Gamble. So I sort of worked for, in the big corporate environment, but through a small company, mm-hmm. helped build Procter's worldwide global computer network.
And then you also had the opportunity to work in a venture capital firm.
Right. So I started doing some entrepreneurial types of things, was traveling to the West Coast, got a flavor for Silicon Valley, loved it. Always thought I'd be interested in venture capital. Found out that there were some venture capital firms started here in Cincinnati and said, what luck? And luckily, they noticed me as well, and we hit it off and ended up working there for almost 10 years.
Do you think an entrepreneur is born, or do you think entrepreneurial behavior is a learned behavior?
I think it's a bit of both. Think about the kids. I have three kids. One is more entrepreneurial than the other. Naturally, I think they all have some of it, but one definitely more than the others. So my degree is in electrical engineering. I happen to believe you need to learn something first. And I've tried to do that with my kids. You know, wanted them to explore a lot of different things. But once they found that thing that was interesting mm-hmm. to them, that they were passionate about, I encouraged them to explore it, to become good at it. Told them the age was no limit, right? Let's just be the best you can at whatever that is that gets you excited. And then from there, you know, take it and try to apply it, right? And I think that part of it can be learned. How do you build a network? How do you think about a business? But there's also some drive, some X component, mm-hmm. I think, that perhaps you're born with.
So, you know, you mentioned the fact that you've given advice that age really should not be a critical component in determining whether you want to launch your own venture or not. So if you're a young person or even an older person.
Look at me.
Who really just has a dream, but just doesn't know how to go about taking action on that dream. I mean, what advice do you have for them?
The first step, and it may sound cliche, is just do it, right? You don't know unless you try and you learn. And, the second cliche is fail fast and frequently, right? That's the only way I think you really learn. I've probably, any of the things I've learned in business, I've learned because I failed three times the first time or more before it finally stuck. So the first is to get out there and do it. Second is to network, right? To talk to a lot of people, seek out experts, find people that are smarter than you are and have them tell you why your idea is not a good idea. And eventually they'll say you do have a good idea.
And don't you think some of the most successful people just surround themselves with other very successful people and take advice from them?
Absolutely. I think that the best entrepreneurs, it's an interesting balance. They're great listeners. They want that, but they also have to have a certain persistence and maybe even pigheadedness because just like with Share This and sharing, when I first said I want to start a company around sharing, people said, what? What do you mean? Didn't quite make sense. So I heard a lot of no's, but I felt that there was something there, and I was on a continual search for data, right, to prove that I was onto something. And that data came in slowly, but just enough to keep me going, just like in golf, just that one shot you have on a round that keeps you playing the next time. I think the entrepreneur needs a little bit of that to make sure that they know they're not crazy. And I think most disruptive ideas typically are not mm-hmm. known as disruptive until after, right?
Right, that's exactly right. Well, Tim, thank you for being our guest and sharing all that great advice. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Tim Shiggle. Tim is the founder and chairman of a company called Share This. And Tim, Share This is an organization you started how many years ago?
Launched Share This in 2007.
And it's grown so rapidly. How many people are actually using?
It reaches about 680 million people around the globe in 40 languages on 2 million or more websites.
And you know, so many people may not even know what Share This is by name, but certainly you see your Share This symbol, which is a green sideways V on most websites, certainly most social websites. You started Share This when you were older than 20. How did you come to the conclusion at that point in your life that you wanted to venture out, get out of your comfort zone, and start a brand new organization?
You know, it's funny because sometimes I worried about that, but not as much as people think. And I had three kids that were not too far away from being ready to go to college. I had a very good job in a venture capital firm. You know, it wasn't necessarily the best economic move on paper, but it started with being passionate about something and really believing that the idea in this case that sharing was going to be an important part of the web, that I gathered enough information that I said, this is a real opportunity. This is really going to happen, and it's not a flash in the pan. This is going to have a long trajectory to it. So that's number one. Number two, the more people that found out about it encouraged me more and more, which also gave me more energy, said, you should really go do that. You should really go do that. So I needed to have that support. I don't think I wouldn't have done it if it was just me. I had, so I was able to line up the investor support, and they were really asking me to do it. I mean, it was at the point where they were almost twisting my arm to do it. So some of the things that I had to worry about in terms of where's my salary going to come from, where's the money going to come from, et cetera, were being taken care of for me, and I didn't have to put myself out too much because they believed and supported the idea.
But it sounds to me like the key there to getting them to support that idea is you must have done a lot of homework, a lot of research, certainly had a great story.
Absolutely. But the other part is, you know, going out and seeking advice and input from folks, the conversation usually started with, hey, I have this hunch that sharing is going to be important. And what I really looked for was, with everybody I hired in the company, a shared vision. Started with, I had this notion, but I wanted to bring other people into it, and I wanted them to embrace it. And when I saw the light bulb go off in their minds, I knew I had another ally. I had somebody else who could bring something to the table, whether it was Dr. Dave Goldberg from University of Illinois, who I really co-founded it with, to the investor group. Once that light bulb went off, I knew they were on my team, and I knew if I had a team, I wasn't alone to go do it.
How much did the business that you ended up with look like what you thought it would?
It's actually scary accurate. New folks who joined the company will go back and look at presentations I made years ago and actually amazed how consistent it was. But I think that's because the original vision was broad enough, aspirational enough, that it gave us room to operate. So clearly the tactics and the day-to-day dynamics and adjustments to the market change constantly, but the trajectory of the business is consistent. And I think that goes to making sure that if you're going to put your energy into something, that it actually is a solid and big enough idea.
I think a lot of people think startups are really for people who are in their 20s. You know, and certainly people who are comfortable in their day job, you know, you walk away from a good job and have kids and it's kind of scary. But at the end of the day, you don't have to be in your 20s. You can actually follow your dream at any age as long as you've prepared for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to know what you're getting into. I don't believe you want to go do this and be naive. You want to be well-informed when you do it. But I don't think there's a limit. I tell my kids there's not a limit to how young they are, and I don't think there's a limit in terms of how old you are. If you're passionate enough about something and other people share that passion and provide you with the support, I think you can pursue that passion any age.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Sunny Southern and Dan Geeding, and we're talking about healthcare and specifically Innovate for Health. And healthcare is certainly something that's very important to all of us. It's getting a lot of attention recently. And Sunny, you're leading a community-wide initiative, Innovate for Health, that's really going to make some drastic improvements to our region's healthcare ecosystem. Let's talk about that.
So what we're working to do at Innovate for Health are two things related to healthcare. One is to improve health, and the second is to reduce the cost of healthcare. And that's typically that is on people's minds. And so Innovate for Health really started because it was identified that this community wanted to be able to show and demonstrate that we have expertise in health and healthcare, and that we want to help the community related to the cost and the quality of the care delivered. And we believe that through innovation, so Innovate for Health, we can reduce the cost of healthcare and improve outcomes and create an economic advantage for this community.
What are some of the innovations that you've done or started?
Innovate for Health doesn't actually start the innovations. The innovation is the process that we've developed around Innovate for Health. So we help the community come to take their ideas from idea to business concept to startup company. And we provide the infrastructure and support through prize money at the events and mentoring throughout the community, and then also through expertise to help people that may never have thought about healthcare as an opportunity for them to develop a career in, to learn what they need to know in order to develop solutions to solve problems in our community.
Prize money always gets my attention for sure. What kind of events and prize money do you have coming up on the horizon?
So on February the 15th, we have the Idea Expo that will be at the GE Aviation Learning Center, and we will be offering 8 $1,000 prizes to people that come up with the best ideas to solve the 2013 challenge. This year's challenge is the triple aim of better health, better care at lower costs. So all people have to do is to come up with an idea of 1,000 characters or less and submit it to our website, and they may be selected to come and pitch to a group of experts throughout the community and win $1,000 and get the mentoring they need to develop that idea into a business concept and hopefully into a startup company.
So it doesn't have to be a full-blown business plan. You're talking about just merely an idea that you can put into 1,000 characters.
That's exactly right.
What are some examples of previous businesses that's developed because of the support of Innovate for Health?
So in August, we launched 7 health IT companies, and the types of solutions that came out of those companies were things like an iPad app that helps children with type 1 diabetes learn about diabetes and how to manage their diabetes, a system that helps protect our health information in the hospitals. We also have an app that was developed to help remember to take your medication. It's called a virtual pill box, so know that what you're getting from your pharmacy in those pill bottles is actually what your physician prescribed. There's another company that developed something to help zap children's fears. And so there's a myriad of different types of applications that have come out.
And Dan, what's your role in all of this?
The Health Foundation believes that our mission is to improve the health of the community, and we want to see this community be number one in the country. And so we've invested our grant money and our services on one end of the organization. We've also invested part of our portfolio in helping startup companies through Innovate for Health, through the Queen City Angels, and through Cincy Tech. And the ecosystem in this community over the last 5 to 7 years has gone from zero to one of the top in the country. And our region has been recognized by the White House and the Office of Innovation and Medicare as being one of the best in the country.
So, Sunny, what type of people do you think are most likely to come and actually submit an ID on February 15th?
We created a vehicle for people to find ways to improve health and healthcare. This impacts all of us, so it's for all walks of life.
And what's the website?
InnovateForHealth.com, INNOV with a number 8, FORHEALTH.com.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guests are Sunny Sutherland and Dan Geeding, and they are both with Innovate for Health. And Innovate for Health's purpose is to improve healthcare in our region. Is our healthcare, compared to other parts of the country, is it worse or is it better or is it just average?
It's really kind of average. And what we're leveraging here, Tom, is we asked the community what kinds of things that they would like for us to focus on. And we have a gem here that not everybody recognizes or is aware of if you're not in that healthcare space. But our expertise in the health IT world is nationally recognized. We have one of the most mature health information exchanges. So at times, I'm sure people have experienced the challenges with when they go to the hospital, their doctor's office may not have the same information, et cetera. Well, in Cincinnati, we've been working to resolve and support that issue since 1997. Through something called HealthBridge. Dan had mentioned yesterday the fact that Todd Park and the Office of Innovation at Health and Human Services, they see Cincinnati as it has tremendous expertise in this space. So typically we think of Cincinnati as an expert in consumer branding or packaged goods. Well, this is another great opportunity for Cincinnati to make the national stage, to get the recognition that we need to help to attract and retain top talent and to bring new jobs to this community. So we're leveraging our expertise in health IT, layering on a piece of innovation to help improve the economic situation in our community.
We had Dan Kincaid on a few months ago, and he was explaining this whole concept of Innovate for Health in terms of going out into the community, finding out from those people right on the front lines what they need, and then going out and encouraging entrepreneurs to help solve and develop solutions to that problem. Are you seeing a lot of that going on, Dan?
Yes, and as I said, I think in the last 5 to 7 years, it was kind of a wasteland 7 years ago on innovation and entrepreneurship. This is a special case of that. But the whole ecosystem, now including the centrifuge process that has started through the Chamber of Commerce and P&G, has put Cincinnati on the map. We never used to get venture capital funding from the coast. We have had two or three events in the last year where significant dollars have flowed to this community because of the quality of the ideas that have been generated.
And hopefully a lot more. I know we had Tim Shigel on not so long ago, and he's running this fund of funds that he hopes to leverage into $100 million in an effort to get those venture capitalists around the country to focus on our companies here in our region.
There are a number of quiet entrepreneurs and super angels in this community who you don't even know about, who have put a lot of money into Cincy Tech, now into Centrifuge, and they stay in the background, but they have really stepped up to make us a competitor on the national scene.
Well, there's a lot of talent here that needs money, isn't there?
Yes, and it's coming out of our universities, and it comes out not just from the business schools, but it's available through all the colleges and all these universities.
Let's just fast forward to say 5 years. Where do you see our region in terms of this whole innovation process?
I think it's already happening. So recently we were named one of the top 10 communities in the country for entrepreneurship. A year ago even, I'm not sure that people would have thought that could be true. So because an importance being placed on entrepreneurship, and we have people like Dan Geeting who've been in this community for years that have been cultivating great talent, and now marrying the talent and the expertise that's been developed through the startups that are here with the talented minds that are coming out of the universities, identifying the real problems in this community, healthcare being one of them, and then putting all that together to create this ecosystem will help to make sure that we get the attention that we need.
February 15th, people can go online at your website. They can submit an idea, 1,000 characters, something about healthcare, how to make healthcare better and less expensive. And what's the website, Sunny?
InnovateForHealth.com, INNOV, number 8, forhealth.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Dr. Gregory Pittman. Dr. Pittman is the owner of Family Tree Chiropractic. And Dr. Pittman, you're also the author of this wonderful book called The 10 Commandments of Ultimate Health. Your chiropractic practice is a bit different than what someone might perceive as a traditional chiropractic practice. Maybe you can share a little bit about what your thinking is and how you've distinguished yourself.
Well, the difference is we try to encompass the whole body of standpoint of mind, body, and spirit in the office. Look at different natural methods of healing the people nutritionally, physically, and emotionally, work on them too. That seems to be what drives the world today and what's going on.
I love the whole concept about spirit because I get the body part for sure. And even many doctors bring the mind part in, you know, stress and how you think about things. But talk a little more about what you mean when you say spirit.
Well, spirit and compass, we look at just the prayers, the first commandment of my book and stuff. So we try to get in touch with our God or creator and try to get that to empower us and get us stronger and try to focus on one thing, not just to be scattered brain in our society and stress we're under all the time, and just take time, be alone and private and take that time for him.
What led you into the chiropractic field in the first place?
As a young child, I was sickly, ill, had asthma, allergies, and the only thing really helped me was start taking vitamins and chiropractic care. That's what got me out of my drug use in the past when I was a kid. So my story and testimony is in the book about how I went through the challenges and kind of how I got to this profession today.
And when should someone, Dr. Pittman, actually see a chiropractor versus what others may see perceived to be a more family health practitioner?
I think people think chiropractors are just back doctors and pain, back pain. Years ago, I mean, chiropractors adjusted and helped with all kinds of illnesses, you know, stomach problems, asthma, allergies and stuff. And we just don't really talk about these days. And I think it's still a very effective treatment. Adjustments help tremendously to get over colds and help boost your immune system up this time of year. It's wonderful for that. There's many, many things chiropractic. You deal with the nervous system and how it works. You open up the whole world of healing in your body when the nervous system works properly.
A lot of chiropractors seem to be interested in more of a holistic approach to medicine. They use natural supplements and things like that. Is that part of your practice as well?
The chiropractic philosophy itself is to heal the body naturally. But the use of the hands, I mean, chiro meaning practicus means, in Greek words, means chiro meaning hand, and then practice by done by. So it's as simple as chiropractic is done by the hands. So we just heal by the hands. We have many practitioners in my practice too. We try to work as a team, which is a miracle that happened there with the team. Everybody works together in the same roof, and we try to encompass and help that patient, whatever needs they need, and it's a good teamwork.
Dr. Pittman, I'm holding the book in my hand, and I'm looking at the appendix, and the very first commandment that you mention in your book is prayer. Do you have to be Christian to be able to read the book or take advantage of some of your philosophy and teachings?
No, not at all. There's Old and New Testament in the book, so it doesn't really matter, Christian or not. We just want to lead people to a life of peace.
You know, past traumas can really manifest themselves as illnesses, can't they? I mean, how does that really affect your overall well-being currently for something that's happened in the past?
Well, the overall well-being, I mean, it gets affected by the trauma itself, as you know, the physical, but the emotional injury impact of that too, how it affects your life, your lifestyle, and then what injury happens. So your muscle groups, your body as a whole takes up that injury, and it can lock in there and stay there, and the brain gets every referred pattern continually in the brain of negativity. So as chiropractic, we try to work the muscle, the joints, the release the tension, the muscles, and if it's deeper, we do other techniques to help release the emotional component of it to the injury if it's not, the body doesn't resolve or heal quickly enough.
And if someone listening today would like to reach you, learn more about your practice, and certainly about your book, The 10 Commandments of Ultimate Health, how can they get your contact information? What is that?
You can call the office at 513-777-0024. The website, just look up Dr. Pittman on the website, and all the information's there, basically, how to get a hold of the book.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. We're here today with Dr. Greg Pittman. Dr. Pittman is a chiropractor with the Family Tree Chiropractic Practice in Montgomery. And he's also the author of The 10 Commandments of Ultimate Health, which is a great book, Dr. Pittman. And, you know, part of the book actually talks about mind, body, spirituality, overall wellness. And here we are, the new year's come and gone. We're into the first few weeks of the new year, and many people's new year's resolutions have probably already been broken. So what do you do if you're someone who really would like to change your life, make 2013 the year that they're going to change their overall health and well-being?
Well, the book in whole is written for the purpose of that person to get that whole balance. So that's the purpose of the book, is the 10 Commandments, and we've done work with just trying to get out to the public and trying to get a challenge for different areas of the town. And recently, just the west side of town, we've St. Ignatius actually did a test on this. I mean, just 6 out of the 10 Commandments is all they did. Just 2 to 3 weeks, they're losing weight, better mental state, they feel better. Blood pressure has dropped down just in a couple weeks because the dietary changes and the stress load, the different exercising. So just 6 out of those 10 Commandments, drinking the water, like I said, and the prayer, all that seems to help. The 6 basic, simple steps in the book help lead to a more consistent life. And they do it for 40 days, they develop better habits. So you develop good habits, you'll take these the rest of your life, because it takes like 1 to 2 years to get fat off your body. Okay, if you have the same, you lose the weight real quick, bring it back again right away. And so the yo-yo diets, we call them all the time. We get the weight and get lost 10 pounds, come back 15. Okay,
right.
That happens a lot. And that's the reason why, because the blood vessels and the fat never dissolve. It takes 2 years to dissolve the blood vessels.
So in other words, when you're on a diet and you think you've lost 10 pounds, you really haven't?
You really haven't. The blood vessels are still laid down there. So if you change your metabolism, drop it real low, and you raise it up again with junky food, dead diet, like I talk in the book, eating dead foods and bad foods, then your weight will just come right back on again. That's why this is good. Develop good habits. Then you develop good habits, you can change your lifestyle. Lifestyle changes, then you can keep the weight off. You have complete control of your life better that way.
How important is exercise in that process?
Well, exercise is very important because it's part of one of my commandments, but also I think the body needs that just to reduce stress, to build physical endurance, increase circulation, heart, muscle health. Exercise is vitally important to give to everyone on a regular basis, not just do it for a little while and, you know, go to the gym membership 2 weeks and burn out after the new year, and you don't see that till next year again. So
this whole challenge, this ultimate challenge, is it psychological? People just tend to do better when there's groups and each other holds one another accountable. Is that the idea?
Well, the idea we had is that in this challenge, they develop in groups. So you got, say, 102 people did the challenge in St. Ignatius. They developed different groups.
And these are adults.
And these are adults. These are adults and teachers over there. They actually did a challenge within each group. So each other is a support group. So you have one leader of the group, and you text them, or you want to do Facebook, what do you want to do to keep in contact with each other, and they help support each other. And then you build that communication lines, build up through that too. So like he said, he says people are talking more. They're actually communicating together. They never talked before. There's kind of a communion going on here with people that never happened before. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're too busy texting and internet and all stuff. We lose that personal contact to people than we should have.
And again, the book is The 10 Commandments of Ultimate Health. And if people would like to get your contact information, find out more about your practice, about the book, what is your contact information?
Well, just looking at Dr. Pittman of Family Tree Chiropractic, the website, and all the information's in there, how to get the book. And call the office at 513-777-0024.
Thank you very much for being our guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.